Morning, everyone. Please join me in prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Welcome you all for this Christmas service. We celebrated in some ways traditional, in some ways unusual. It's interesting to note that up until the late 1800s, the Christmas was not celebrated in most of America and most of the world. It was considered a pagan holiday by many, and it was even outlawed in some places. And it wasn't until later that it became more of a social kind of an event. And, of course, Santa Claus, which is based on St. Nicholas, an early Christian saint, came into the picture and pictured as a man in a red suit and jolly and sliding down chimneys. And, of course, that's based on the original story that St. Nicholas, a true saint, historical saint, came to know of three daughters who did not have a dowry and thought what to do. So he had money, and he is able to, I suppose he slipped into their house. I don't know if he is slipping in like a thief or not, but he came in, and the ladies used to dry their stockings over the fireplace at nighttime so that they, when woke up in the morning, they were warm and they were dry. And he dropped in their coins, enough so that each one of them would have their dowry money so that they could get married and get on with life. And he did many, many deeds like this, and he was very well respected, and down through time he was canonized and became a saint. And then eventually he got transformed into the different images that we know of today. But these are wonderful traditions. They're based on real people in the beginning. And then they take on a life of their own, and they get spun in various different ways. And in one sense, we can decry that many times it loses its original meaning. But the wonderful thing about parable is that it can be considered on many different levels. There is what you might call the pedestrian level, and that is for the, you may say, the average consumer. And they will hear the story, and they will hear it as perhaps a historical note or a fanciful tale. And it's wonderful for them. They get benefit from it when it's told in a good way. And then there are those who are dwellers and seekers after deeper truth. And those will begin to unfold the pages of the book, delve into the later chapters, and move into the true depth and wisdom and vision that's entailed in any great myth, any great story. And embedded within that, and it's oftentimes true, with any particular tale that has lasting value, there's a power there. And that's what makes it lasting in people's minds. It speaks to something deep within the soul. Now, sometimes they can be horrific tales, tales of caution, and they speak to our fears. And so they are powerful because of that. And then there are all those stories that are told that awaken something deeper inside of us, something higher, something refined, and the mind may not, in the beginning, completely understand what the drawing power is, but somehow it lifts the mind up. It takes us deeper within ourselves. These kinds of stories help us in our evolutionary path as we move into higher forms of consciousness. And perhaps at first they are an unconscious impulse rising up, but then it becomes more conscious. When we seek higher truth, we begin to refine our understanding. We don't begin in a God-realized state. We begin exactly where we're at. There's no choice. There's no option. We'd like to start at the end, but we begin at the beginning. And so it is that all of us pursue this path. It was wonderful in hearing Mother talk about the inner meaning of the scriptures. I had grown up with these stories, had learned many of them, but I didn't comprehend them. I didn't understand, and it's sad to me today that there are so many wonderful, intelligent people who are put off to these great myths and these great stories because of the way that they have been interpreted, the way that they have been misused, perhaps, down through time. And they see in them logistical flaws. They look at them and they see them as non-historical. And so they put them away as child's tales. But it's not so. It's not so. Because these are tremendously powerful. They are a roadmap or a blueprint of the very path of consciousness that we are traversing. And if they could but see it, they would see the tremendous genius that goes in behind these stories. Not a genius manufactured with the logical mind, but through deep intuitive wisdom and understanding. Spiritual masters have transcended time, moved down through time, and speak to us today. And it's just as relevant, it's just as powerful, it's just as fresh as the day that they were revealed. This is the lasting power behind true scripture, true stories that speak to the deepest and the best in us. Even within our guru lineage tradition, we see different emphases. Master took a more psychological point of view in terms of talking about many of the scriptures. Sri Yukteswar also did this and spoke more to the mind. Larhi Mahasya and Mother both took more of a physical, how it interacts in the body, what happens within the body as you make this evolutionary course. All have value. And as Mother said, with many that you'll see different facets of the diamond. But when you have complete and total God realization, you have the whole diamond. You become that diamond, and you begin to manifest the light. You're not just reflecting it anymore. These are all stages that we go through in evolution. In the beginning, we begin to comprehend some of the light, some of the wisdom directly from God's mind. Then we begin to actually feel that consciousness, that Christ consciousness, manifesting in each one of our consciousness. We begin to transmit the light. We're not just merely reflecting it any longer. And gradually, through complete purification of the mind, the body, through every aspect of your being, you become a lamp that is lit up and is burning brightly and manifesting the divine light as you were meant to from the beginning. These scriptures are a wonderful tale. And if we knew how to read them, we would see that in the beginning, in Genesis, is the devolution of the human consciousness. We begin in complete and total union with the divine cosmic whole. And then God breathes out. He projects himself out into creation. Now, this is all metaphorical speaking. So it's not to be taken literally. How could God be breathing out when he doesn't have a physical body? There's no lungs. There's no air. It's all before any of these conditions exist. But it is said that he breathes out. You can see that when you breathe out, you project out air. There's a wind that goes out from you. And so, like those divine airs, these subtle airs of the energetic realm and light realm, project themselves out, and everything comes about as a result of that. Now, in the beginning, consciousness, divine consciousness, said to individualized consciousness, human consciousness, you may enjoy all the fruits of all this creation, but don't become too enamored with them. Don't become so enthralled with the things of creation that you forget the primary creator. But we have all done exactly that. We've forgotten. We wanted to have this experience of what it is to be human. We knew that we had a divine nature. We knew intuitively that that divine nature could never be erased, could never be obliterated, no matter what we do to it, no matter how many layers of filth, of crud, of crust that we pile on top of it. The divine nature is always there, untouched. And so we entered into this life and we were careless. We began to forget our divine nature. We began to focus completely on this body and the five senses. We started to get enmeshed in it all. And as we forgot our divine nature, we completely got embroiled in the world of the body and of the senses. And the ego formed up around it. And the ego actually became polarized against the divine nature. Now, ego, when it's in its original form, is the witness. But when it takes over the show and it thinks it can run everything, it's no longer a witness, it's no longer an instrument of divine nature, then we're in real trouble, and that's where many of us find ourselves to be at. But not all is lost, because, as I said earlier, the divine nature is always immanent within you, and yet it may be covered with many, many layers. Layers of ignorance, layers of darkness, layers of attachment, layers of desire nature, that all supersede the divine nature. In order to reclaim that heavenly realm, we have to be born again, born into spiritual consciousness. And this is why Jesus came. Jesus came as an avatar. An avatar means descent of spirit into flesh. It is a perfect manifestation. He came as a soul, but without any karma, without any delusion. He came voluntarily. Most of us come into this earth plane because we have some desire nature and some attachment that keeps us bound here. And so we keep being drawn back into this earth plane again and again because we're working that out. We're working out our desires. We're working out our attachments. Now, some are making progress towards refining consciousness, and some are going deeper and deeper into ignorance itself. And it just is determined by how we use our mental capacities, how we use our will, how we use our abilities as a human being, and how we direct our life and our life force. And it's mathematical, really, in a way. The way that you direct your mind, the way that you direct your attention, there's a very exacting law that goes along with it. And it goes beyond morals. Morals are a reflection of that law, of that principle. As you give, so shall you receive. As you project from you, so it comes back to you. As you build with each thought, with each word, with each action, so goes the building. That's what the structure looks like. That's what your consciousness creates. And if we don't like what we have created, if we don't like the results, we have got one place to turn, and that's to ourselves. For what we ourselves have done, we may have forgotten the time when we have done it. That's very convenient, isn't it? But nevertheless, it's true. Everything that you experience is a result of what you yourself have set into motion. And even though there may be others in your life that seem to plague you, that seem to be the problem in your life, they would not be that problem if you did not give them the power to have that over you. In Jesus' incarnation, he said a beautiful thing. He was facing the temporal power of the world. And the power of the world said, "Don't you know I have power over your life?" And Jesus responded to Pontius Pilate and said, "You would have no power over me were it not given to you." There is a higher power. There is a higher intelligence. Now, you wouldn't think, in one way, that God would give a temporal power that kind of terrible pronouncement over his own beloved son. And yet it is so, because some higher purpose was being worked out through that divine incarnation. But at this time of year, we focus on the early beginnings of it, that divine incarnation, that incarnation of divinity into flesh. And from a historical standpoint, we know that whatever the details of the Master's life, of Jesus' life, were, whether everything that's written is historical or metaphorical, in one way it makes no difference. What we do know is that there was a tremendous spiritual master born. Otherwise, it would not have the tremendous power and the lasting power that it has down through time. Mother sometimes speculated as to whether Jesus ever lived his life as it's portrayed in the scriptures. There are some things that don't completely fit together. And it may be that lesser consciousness down through time made interpolations and put in their own insertions into the text. And it could be that higher consciousness and higher minds added to the story, and rightfully so, because they brought out further details of the spiritual path. There's no record, and there are many records, of all the misdeeds that Herod did, but there's no record about children of a particular locality all being killed. And you would think that that would note some historical footnote, at least, for somebody who did a lot of things, and many of those things were noted down by Josephus and other historians of the time. And yet that's not noted. Now, did this actually occur or not? The inner meaning is that the children represent the sexual energy within each one of us. That at this time, when consciousness is ready to be raised up, that the sexual energy is turned within and lifted up through the spine. And the temptation comes from Herod, or passion, to expel that seed. And when you do during this critical time, then the seed loses its power as it's projected back out into the earth. But if there is a seclusion, if there is a withdrawal, if there is an overcoming of Herod, and then those passions die down, then the Christ seed is preserved. And then the Christ seed goes to Egypt. Now, Egypt, in the psychology of things, represents the subconscious. It's down under. And it's a place of darkness. Metaphysically, it represents the base of the spine. And you go to the base of the spine, and there you reside, you wait. and the Christ seed waits for a while there. But before all of that happened, there is Joseph and Mary, and Joseph represents the pineal and the Mary the pituitary. And these two glands make secretions, and those secretions come together and form a Christ seed. And it does that according to the lunar cycle. And when that Christ seed comes down through the ganglionic nervous system, it's deposited just behind the stomach. And Bethlehem means the house of bread, or it's the place of the stomach, and it's a small conical-like cave, as Mother described it, that's there. And the seed is there, and then the meditating individual is closing their eyes, and they see the spiritual light, they see the star that's residing in their own ajna, their third eye point. And that star is glowing. The consciousness is ready to be speeded up. It's ready to go through an evolutionary change. You're ready to go from the Son of Man to the Son of God. That is, your consciousness is going to go through a complete and total transformation. And when you're ready for that, and you're dedicated toward that, and you see that tremendous light there, you hear the angels' voices in the sky, and you hear the Om, you hear the various melodies, you hear the music of the spheres at times. And all of these things come to you in deepened meditation. It's quiet of the night. You sit with your eyes closed. You sit in the quietness of your own being. You're not out in the marts of men, but rather you're enraptured with the night and with the star and with all things holy, and you hear these sounds. This is the Christ seed born in you, and there is nothing more thrilling, more powerful, more eventful than that. And it just didn't happen to one individual 2,000 years ago. It happens down through all history. It happened before Jesus was born. It's happened many, many times since then. This is the great good news. That's what gospel means, is good news. It's the great good news that this is our potentiality being explored, coming to life. No longer now are you talking about historical terms. No longer are you talking about fantasies or fables. Your life is now reflecting exactly what's being spoken of in these scriptures. Now, Charles Fillmore was a wonderful sage, and he went through many of the descriptions of the words and went back to the original meanings of these words. And with Joseph, the original meaning comes from Hebrew, and it means whom Jehovah will add to. Jehovah shall increase. He shall increase progressively, i.e. from perfection unto perfection. And so, of course, Joseph is the father of Jesus in one sense, because he was the spouse, the husband of Mary. And yet we know that Jesus also didn't come in a normal way, that he came through a direct implantation of spirit into the womb of Mary. So he writes here that metaphysically, Joseph and Mary, the parents of Jesus, represent wisdom and love. Wisdom and love, which bring forth a manifestation into substance. Joseph might also be said to represent the Son of Man and Mary the Divine Motherhood. Joseph was merely betrothed to Mary, yet she was great with child, so Joseph was minded to put her away privily. This means that we do not, in the first stages of the birth of the Christ in us, understand the process, because Joseph represents the intelligence, the wisdom, the intellectual side of mankind, and it's the higher intellect It's the buddhi nature, as is talked about in yoga. But in the beginning, the mind is still clouded. So the reasoning mind doesn't always catch up with what the intuitive mind, or Mary, understands. We get involved in the path, but there's a part of us who doesn't believe. There's a part of us who doesn't understand, and we want to understand, but we have doubts, we have confusion. We haven't yet come into the Christ light and Christ intelligence that will in one day inform us the truth of all these things. And so Joseph is not, in that sense, equipped to give full and complete birth to the Christ child, because the Christ comes from higher consciousness directly. And yet he is required because he is a stabilizing force. The mind is required eventually to catch up. But it's spending all of its time, as the Christ is born within, being taught by the Christ child, by the Christ intelligence. Gradually, the divine life begins to unfold inside of you. Now, in the beginning, that was certainly true for myself. When I listened to these truths from Mother, I was able to take them in on a certain level. And in the beginning, and partially because of the way that Mother taught, she didn't teach in a sequential style. And part of that was she wanted to break the mind. She didn't want you to start getting curious with the intellectual mind, because she wanted you to go beyond it. She wanted you to go beyond the Joseph aspect. Sometimes we can get caught up in the intellect, but the intellect is not the complete picture. It's all right for doing certain things, but for complete realization, it actually becomes an impediment. So we put aside all the things that we presume to be true, all the things that we thought of, all the things that we've read about, and we think, yes, that's true. And we resonate with it on some level, and yet it is not completely realized truth yet. It is partially realized truth. And so, in the beginning, I oftentimes wondered about what Mother taught. I didn't know the truth of what she taught, yet I felt it inside of me. I felt the power of God in her. I felt the purity of God in her. And there are people who get tripped up with this. They don't understand, and so they put it away. Now, I didn't put it away. At the most, I just set it aside. I didn't understand it. I knew I didn't understand it. But I was willing to put it aside and let God explain it to me. All right, I don't understand this completely, but eventually this will come clear. And it doesn't come clear with a lot of reading or a lot of reasoning or a lot of talk. It comes clear by going deeper into meditation, by starting to have experiences, and those experiences begin to reveal the truth to you. Joseph is not that truth, but yet he is a highly refined part of the mind or the buddhi. So this means that in the first stages of the birth of the Christ in us, we do not understand the process, and sometimes we are moved to put it away from us. The soul is heavily charged with divine life. That is the birth of the Christ in you. You feel that movement inside of you, you feel the power of it, you feel the uplifting force in it. The soul is heavily charged with the divine life, and so full that it cannot express itself intelligently. You go to talk to somebody about what you think, about what you feel, about what you experience, and it comes out as total gibberish. You don't even make sense to yourself, much less making sense to somebody else. And it's because you're not ready. And we need to be careful during this time. I felt at the time when I first met Mother, I didn't talk to a lot of people about this. And sometimes I felt, oh, this is somebody that I can talk to about it. And I'd start talking to, and it just didn't make any sense. And I couldn't articulate, I couldn't express what it was that I felt, what I believed, what I thought, what I knew. It just wouldn't come out. And then there were those moments, and they were rare, particularly in the beginning, that I would begin to talk about this. And the words would just flow. and the wisdom would flow. I would be enthralled with what was being said. And I was the one who was speaking, and it wasn't just out of ego, that thinking I'm such a great fellow, but the power of God was flowing. The feeling of God was flowing. And it was wonderful then. It was uplifting, and it made complete and total sense to me and to the other person. And these are wonderful times, but they don't always come in the beginning, so you have to guard yourself to some extent. You have to put a fence around you to keep mum, to keep quiet, to keep the power of your experiences. As Jesus says, you don't want to dangle pearls before swine. Because if you do, they'll turn around and rend you. And so they will. People will turn around and you think that you've had a fine conversation and you felt very uplifted by it, and they don't understand it. And perhaps later on they ridicule you or put you down in some way for saying what you said, even though at the time it felt all right. And so you don't want to go through this experience, because in the beginning, this Christ nature inside of you is still a newborn baby. It's not ready. It hasn't come into the full fruition yet. So it needs protection. It needs your protection. So to go out there and tell everyone and everything about yourself is not what is needed or required or what is best for you. It's better to keep it mum. It's better to keep it quiet and allow that Christ seed within you to form itself so that it really comes into maturity. There are many stages along the path when we think that we really have come someplace, we really know something. And the mind grabs hold of that. And if we're not careful, we can go out and start giving lectures and start representing ourselves as an expert in the field. And we're not fully ripened fruit yet. It's still in the formation stage. And if we do that, we can actually end up retarding our progress, because we're representing ourselves as something that we have not yet become. This, for many of us, is a long and severe path. It is not something that overnight you just get it all and you're able to represent it all. It's a gradual coming to understanding, and this is what Joseph represents. He represents that part of the mind, and you notice that Joseph dies earlier in Jesus' life, as Jesus comes into his own, as he really begins to grow into adulthood. We know that it's sometime after, in a literal kind of a sense, after he is 12 years old. And he's coming into his manhood. In that sense, the Christ consciousness in you is beginning to really stand on its own two feet. And it no longer needs the protection of the mind. The mind completely subsumes itself into the Christ intelligence. Now, if you tell somebody who has not yet had the experience of awakened consciousness that the mind completely subsumes itself, that it completely dies away, they won't know what you're speaking about. They'll think merely in terms of negation, of what you've lost. How could I lose my mind and still be all right? And yet this is exactly the case. People who have a severe mental illness are at the opposite end of the continuum. They cannot be able to lose themselves and to become dissolved into the divine consciousness. They become dissolved in the subconscious mind, and it becomes a horror story for most of them. It's frightening. It's overwhelming. It can't be handled. And so eventually the human ego and the human mind has to be developed to be strong enough to be able to handle itself, to be able to handle what occurs. And as the human ego develops itself more and more strongly, it is able to have glimpses, at least, of the divine mind and divine consciousness. It takes a very, very durable and strong ego to be able to go through this transformation. Now, this may seem like a paradox, and it is in a way, because the ego has to be strong. It has to be balanced. It has to really have come into its own in order to be able to express the divine qualities. Otherwise, it would get completely destroyed, but not in the way that produces God realization, but rather sends the mind into the subconscious mind, which is just merely a creation of all the different personas you've ever had during your different lifetimes. And so it sends you back down into human consciousness. So there are many times when we are simultaneously in our spiritual path developing the ego, developing the mind and positive virtues, bringing about a strong human ego. Mother oftentimes said that she used to build up the ego of some that were around her, and that she did that in full knowledge that later on she'd have to go about destroying it. But that's what was required for that individual, because if somebody has psychological and mental tendencies that trip them up time and again, they won't be able to make the whole journey. Now, this is true for most all of us. It's very, very rare that you find an exception. Once in a while, you will have a soul like Jesus, born into this world, divinity manifest in the flesh. They come with that consciousness. They come with the whole package already there. Now, sometimes for their own purposes, they keep themselves in a state of ignorance for a period of time in this lifetime. Ramana Maharshi is an example of that, of somebody who lived a certain amount of years. I think he was 16 when the day of the Great Awakening came to him, and it came in a sudden, it came in a flash. And he seemed to have it right then, and he continued on with it. He went through some different sadhana, some different spiritual practices, but the fundamental realization that he had had was fixed. It was there. It didn't vary at all. If you can imagine that you're in a room and there's no light in that room at all, and you have to reach out with your hands and feel around and try to sense where there are objects at to avoid and where to walk and where not to walk. And that's the way the human mind is, that's focused on the senses. Then imagine that the lights are flicked on. And then suddenly you can see. You can see everything in that room in total and perfect clarity. And as you look around, you see all these other souls who are walking around with their arms outstretched. And they're blind somehow. They don't see the light in the same way that you do. And they have this inability somehow. But you are there and you try to awaken them to the fact that if they open their eyes, they'd be able to see the light. They wouldn't have to reach out through their hands trying to feel this world in that way. They'd be able to see it truly. But many don't believe you because they've never had that experience before. And so this is the problem that great spiritual masters have in trying to convey what they themselves experience. When the Buddha first had his awakening, and that's what the Buddha means, the awakened one, when he had his first awakening, his first thought coming back down into more normal human consciousness, but now enlightened, was that this is not teachable. I can't tell anybody about this. I can't possibly convey what it is that I am now experiencing. And it was a dilemma for him. But gradually it began to evolve through him about a means of how he might be able to teach this through the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. And he delivered it with great clarity and great purpose. And there are many who are able to comprehend these great truths and be able to apply them in their own lives. And so great spiritual masters such as Jesus, such as Buddha, such as Krishna, such as Mother and Master, Sri Yukteswar, Lahari Mahasya, Babaji, Papa, Mataji, Swami Satchidanandaji, these great masters are reaching out to us to awaken us, to open our eyes, to inspire the Joseph within us, the enlightened intelligence and intellect, the buddhi, within us, in order to direct the mind towards the Christ birth. And so this is his purpose. Now, to go on with Joseph, and so full that it cannot express itself. The soul is heavily charged with divine life, and so full that it cannot express itself intelligently, because no union has yet taken place between it and the understanding, or Joseph. And so Christ's intelligence is that awakening, is that light that eventually will bring the consciousness into a new way of being. Now, in the beginning, we use the mind to try to think of what realization will be. We try to project ourselves, and perhaps we've had some hints and we've had some visions along the way. But this Christ intelligence, when it comes, is a new way of being in this world. And as Mother used to say, she had a direct pipeline with the divine consciousness. It was no longer hit and miss. But it was a flow that flowed to her mind, to her heart, to her entire being. She is illuminated with it. She's shone with that divine intelligence, with that divine love, with that divine life. It permeated her, every part of her. I think it's very interesting that Mother was born on Christmas Day, and that symbolically this is a wonderful thing, because this is the birth of another incarnation. Mother herself came without any karma. That is to say, she had resolved everything in previous lifetimes. And when a soul comes into that complete state of enlightenment, when they come to this earth, they come completely voluntarily. Mother told one time of how, in her own realization, she was lifted up. And she realized that she had nothing left to do in this incarnation in terms of gaining of realization. She had come in a state of ignorance for a period of time for her own purposes. And when she was ready, she became completely awakened. And now her vision was transferred far above this earth. And she was looking down upon this earth, and she was residing within the complete and total freedom of her being. There is nothing obligating her at all to stay here on this earth. She could leave the body, and she had had many difficulties in the body. She had had pain in the body. She had a lot of problems with it. And I think when we've had a lot of problems with the body, we get to start thinking, well, it wouldn't be so bad to shed this body and be done with it, and to free myself with it, knowing, as she knew, what resided for her beyond the death of the body. The death of the body means freedom and spirit. You are no longer contained. You are no longer limited in that sense. Even though she had her complete realization of her oneness with God, still to hold a body is a little bit like wearing a heavy lead overcoat. And it's something that you have to endure to some extent. Even though it too is filled with divine light and divine life, nevertheless, you have that experience of it. And she was freed of it in this moment, and she was looking down upon this earth and thinking on these things. And she knew that she could just leave the body now if she chose to. But as she looked down upon the earth and she saw the people here and all the different beings here, and she saw the difficulties that people went through, she saw the wars, the conflicts, the fights, those who were striving for realization, her heart went out to this world. It went out to all the people who were here, particularly all those who were striving for realization. And she just felt with everything in her that she wanted to serve here on this planet. She wanted to serve the souls who were here, who were striving for their complete realization with God. And in her mind, there was no question of a doubt. there's absolutely no hesitation, knowing that perhaps you would have to pay a terrific price in coming back into this body. And she had to fight in order to maintain body consciousness. She kept on wanting to be lifted up out of body consciousness, and she had to work in order to keep her consciousness focused here on this earthly plane. And I know exactly what it is that she felt, because I too have difficulty many, many times being able to focus my consciousness here on this body, on this earth. It keeps on being lifted up by God in the higher realms and higher spheres. And sometimes it's just the work that he's doing through this form. But it's difficult in that sense, because everything inside of you is being lifted up, and yet God has given you different things to do here on this material form. And Mother wanted us to live balanced lives. She wanted us to have the full complement. And that means to have complete divine consciousness, even while we have a material form. That divine light, that divine Christ consciousness, as it comes down into your intelligence, into your body, and you can sense it in yourself if you just feel for it, there are darkened places inside of you. There are darkened places in your subconscious mind, in your body consciousness. Places where the light has not totally been revealed yet. But as you purify the mind, the consciousness, and the body, these areas become filled with light. Filled with light. And now, every place that you look, you only see the divine intelligence, the divine consciousness, divine love everywhere. Bliss and joy are stamped upon your being. Every impulse, every thing that you experience through the senses even, you see as a divine life. Now there is no separation, there is no difference whether you have your eyes opened and you are looking outward, or you have your eyes and you are turned within. Because it is all divine. It is all God's play. It is all his mind. It is all his intelligence. God is infinite and unlimited. And if you think that there are any limits to your realization, or that realization comes in an instant and then there's nothing more, you are far, far underestimating what God consciousness is. You have to understand it's a tendency of the human mind to want to circumscribe consciousness, to want to put limits on it, to put boundaries and walls around it. This is the nature of the human mind and the human ego. It's for its own security. I don't believe in boredom. Boredom is an impossibility to me. Boredom is really energy that is stuck within the mind and within the body. Boredom cannot be in God consciousness. You thrill at each revelation that comes to you. You continue on in an individual sense, finding out more and more aspects of God, the divine intelligence that has created everything that is. How dare we think that we have come to any kind of ending, or that we may know everything there is to know. It's not possible. Not in an individual sense. When you are lifted up into complete union with all divine spirit, then you feel your connection and your oneness with the all intelligence, the all pervasive wisdom. But do not ever think that you have come to any ending when it comes to realization. It's just simply not possible. It's the most wonderful life that you can embark upon. And you become more and more humble in this sense, that you realize more and more what insignificance the human intelligence is when you compare it with the vast intelligence and consciousness and light that God is. That becomes so profound in your mind that you realize that your own little thoughts, your own little desires, your own little world is just a nothing in comparison to that. And now you happily oblige and cooperate and become an instrument of that divine intelligence. This is what the Christ has come to awaken in us. And when we hear the truth and the power of the truth, then we need to let that come into us and let it transform us. Let it change us into new beings to become sons and daughters of the divine. To become a son of God means to become completely and totally transformed, body, mind, and soul. But you know, there are those who just simply become indifferent towards God. And what can God do with that? As Sri Yukteswar once said, the world needs to be their guru for a while longer. Because they become indifferent. They somehow become blunted. Joseph doesn't comprehend everything and can even turn away as that Christ is being born. There are those who have spiritual experiences, and sometimes they have profound ones, and they rise up very high, and they end up turning to the lower planes. They get involved with the astral planes. They get involved with the psychic. They get involved with various levels of masters on different realms. Why limit yourself in this way when you yourself can be accessing that directly, that same divine intelligence, no matter how great a being may be? Babaji does not want you to worship him and not have your own realization. Jesus would not want it. None of the great masters would want it. And yet there are those who become totally enthralled with the various levels of mastery. Now, as long as they inspire us, as long as they lift us up within our own beings and inspire us to seek out that realization, then it's wonderful. But don't let that limit you. There are those who think that if they learn a foreign language, Sanskrit or Hebrew or some other ancient language, if they investigate history, then they will somehow improve themselves, and at one point this can be helpful, but at another point it becomes an obstacle and you have to let it go. These are the subtle things that begin to interfere with our own realization. And we must strive with everything in our being in order to attain that greatest realization. We must surrender every part of us. Because it takes every part of us to be surrendered in order to let go of all the limitations that we have imposed upon ourselves. Only when we have completely and totally surrendered ourselves can we really become open to what the divine consciousness wants to do with us and to bring us into a state of realization. But we are afraid. We are afraid that if we completely let go, that divine consciousness will not take care of us, will not lead us into a place of greater realization, that it will perhaps just leave us abandoned, or worse yet, take us into some hellish region and just leave us there. But as Jesus said, if a son asks a father for a loaf of bread, will he give him a stone? No, a loving father will not do that. And how much greater will your own divine father take care of you? Constantly he was exhorting us, live on divine consciousness. Allow divine consciousness and divine will to take care of you, to move you. It doesn't mean you become irresponsible. You have to become more responsible, not less. But now your responsibility is to God, not to the world. Not to mammon. You have transferred your allegiance from this world to God. And now you open yourself 100% toward what God wants to do through you. This is the most fantastic life we can have if we will but open ourselves to it. But we have to will it. We have to be willing. We have to be open to it. And not remain indifferent to it. It does not matter what others think of you. Not matter at all. In fact, sometimes you can tell your progress by who your critics are. And those who would criticize you are those who are most afraid. And you think to yourself, would I want to turn over my life's direction to such an individual? Is that who I'd want running my life? And yet, if you allow their opinion to curb your activities, then aren't you doing exactly that? God realization means to become completely free. Now, having Christmas at this time of year is really a bit of manufactured history. I have read where if the shepherds were out in the fields watching after their flocks, it was probably springtime, because that's the time when sheep would have their babies and the wolves would be around and they would snatch the new little lambs away. And so they needed guarding at that time. They wouldn't be guarding this time of year. But it doesn't make any difference. It's a wonderful. There are those who say, well, it's all these pagan influences, but frankly, I kind of like a lot of the pagan influences, so that's fine with me. And of course, one of them is the solstice. And the solstice is symbolically of when the earth turns. It's the darkest time of the year, and it turns toward the light. It turns towards the longest day of the year. And so in our own life, we come through a period of time now. And astrologically, this can be a very dark time as we approach the solstice. It can bring up a lot of difficulties, and there's been a lot of people facing a lot of difficult things. But then the solstice comes, and the turning comes, and the turning towards the light. Now, just in the same way that you don't have summer the day after the solstice, it's a gradual unfolding. It's a gradual movement. But it is a definite turning. And if you can allow yourself to begin to open yourself more and more and more and more to the light, and let go of the darkness, let go of your hold, let go of your fear, let go of those desires that you're afraid won't be fulfilled. God is so much more tremendous. It's a little bit like a man who lives in a small town all of his life, doesn't know anything beyond that. And then another individual, a friend of his, goes out into the world and he sees the world. And he sees that there's a much bigger, vaster world than they ever imagined there was outside of the small village. And he may come back to that village, he may come back and live in that village, but now he has an awareness of what's beyond the village. And he may really appreciate some of the elements of what it is to live in a small town, in a small village like that. And he may love it. But he also knows that there's more to life than just that. And when a great realized being such as Mother comes back to this earthly plane and realizes what a much vaster field of consciousness there is, and yet there can be some things that are charming about this, but she would never again relegate her mind and her consciousness to such a limiting, infinitesimal sphere of consciousness. And so for you too, to not limit yourself, not to become parochial in your consciousness, but to open yourself to the vast intelligence and light and power that Jesus came to awaken in each and every one of us. He did not come for the world to worship him, but to worship and adore the Father who sent him, the divine consciousness, the divine spirit. Let us awaken to the truth that divine consciousness and intelligence is with you now. It is with you now. It is awakening itself in you now. And what it is looking for is your cooperation, your love, your willingness. And when it finds such a soul, it is so happy. It is so happy. Can you sing with me? Mother's wonderful chant that Amy Cannon put to music. It's quite beautiful. Lord, let my attention. Lord, let my attention be forever fixed upon Thee. Let me love Thee. Let me serve Thee. Let me worship Thee alone. Thou art all and all in all. Lord, let my attention be forever fixed upon Thee. Let me love Thee, let me serve Thee, let me worship Thee alone. Thou art all and all in all. Lord, let my attention be forever fixed upon Thee. Let me love Thee. Let me serve Thee. Let me worship Thee alone. Thou art all and all in. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet
and surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection,
surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Wish you all a merry and blessed Christmas, and that Christ be born within you daily and manifest His entire glory throughout your being. In the name of God, Christ, and Gurus. Om. Since this is the time of peace on earth and goodwill towards all men, let us think of this world and send out healing ohms. and feeling the tremendous power of spirit within you. And thinking of this world as perhaps a beach ball right in front of you. And that with the tremendous power of spirit that you send out this healing vibration that produces a change in consciousness, a change in feeling all over this world, that hearts and minds everywhere are touched by this vibration, particularly those who are attuned to it, but also those who have no sense of it at all. Somehow they're quickened, they're uplifted in the power of this vibration. Let us send out those healing ohms now.
Oh.